Chapter 17. Once Pitt squeezed inside, he paused and hung motionless, slowly settling on his knees, listening to his pounding heart and his breath escaping from the exhaust valve, waiting until his eyes eventually became accustomed to the fluid gloom. He didn't know what he'd expected to find. What he found was an array of terracotta jars, pitchers, cups, and plates neatly stacked in shelves set in the bulkheads. One was a large copper pot he had touched when groping through the hull. Its walls had turned a deep patina green. At first he thought his knees were resting on the hard surface of the deck. He felt about with his hands and discovered he was kneeling on the tiled surface of a hearth. He glanced up and saw his bubbles rise up and spread in a wavering cover. He stood and surfaced into clear air, his head and shoulders having risen above the water level of the fjord. "I'm inside the ship's galley," he notified the spellbound party on the ice. "The upper half is dry. Camera is rolling." "Acknowledged," Giordino said briefly. Pitt used the next few minutes to video record the galley's interior above and below the water level, while keeping a running dialogue on the inventory. He found an open cupboard stocked with several elegant glass vessels. He lifted one and peered inside. It held coins. He picked one out, rubbed away the algae with his gloved fingers, and shot tape with one hand. The coin's surface revealed a golden color. A sense of awe and apprehension flooded over Pitt. He looked quickly around as if expecting a ghostly crew, or at least their skeletal apparitions, to come bursting through the hatchway to accuse him of theft. Only there was no crew. He was alone and touching objects that belonged to men who had walked the same deck, prepared food and eaten here, men who had been dead for 16 centuries. He began to wonder what had happened to them. How had they come to be in the frozen north when there were no records of such a historic voyage? They must have died of exposure, but where did their bodies lie? "You'd better come up," said Giordino. "You've been down almost 30 minutes." "Not yet," replied Pitt. 30 minutes, he thought. It seemed more like 5. Time was slipping away from him. The cold was beginning to affect his brain. He dropped the coin back in the glass vessel and continued his inspection. The galley's ceiling rose 0.5 meter above the main deck overhead, and small arched windows that normally allowed ventilation were battened down on the upper side of the forward bulkhead. Pitt pried one partially open, only to confront a solid wall of ice. He made a rough measurement and found the water level was deeper toward the aft end of the galley. Pitt took this to indicate that the bow and central section of the hull were aground on the raised slope of the ice-buried shoreline. "Come up with anything else?" Giordino inquired with burning curiosity. "Like what?" "Remains of the crew?" "Sorry, no bones to be seen." Pitt ducked under the water and scanned the deck to make certain. It was free and clean of litter. "They probably panicked and abandoned ship at sea," Giordino theorized.
"Nothing points to a panic," said Pitt. "The galley could pass a general inspection."
"Can you penetrate the rest of the ship?"
"There's a hatchway in the forward bulkhead. I'm going to see what's on the other side."
He leaned down and ducked through the low and narrow opening, carefully pulling his lifeline and air hose after him. The darkness was oppressive. He unhooked the dive light from his weight belt and swept its beam around a small compartment. "I'm now in some kind of storeroom. The water is shallower here, rising just short of my knees. I can see tools. Yes, the ship's carpenter's tools. Spare anchors, a large steelyard."
"Steelyard?" Giordino broke in.
"A balance scale that hangs from a hook."
"Gotcha.
There's also an assortment of axes, lead weights, and fish netting. Hold on while I document." A narrow wooden ladder led upward through an opening in the main deck. After shooting tape, he cautiously tested it, surprised to find it still stout enough to support his weight. Pitt slowly climbed the rungs and poked his head into the shattered remains of a deck cabin. Little was visible except a few buried bits of debris. The cabin had been nearly crushed flat by the buildup of ice. He dropped down and waded through another hatch that opened into the cargo hold. He swung the dive light's beam from starboard to port and instantly went numb from shock. It was not only a cargo hold. It was also a crypt. The extreme cold had transformed the dry hold into a cryogenic chamber. 8 bodies in a state of near-perfect preservation were grouped around a small iron stove toward the bow.
Each was covered by a shroud of ice, making them look as though they had been individually wrapped in a thick, clear plastic. Their facial expressions appeared peaceful, and their eyes were locked open. Like mannequins in a shop window, they were posed in different positions, as if placed and adjusted for the correct attitude. Four sat around a table eating, plates in hand, cups raised to mouth. Two reclined side by side against the hull, reading what Pitt guessed were scrolls. One was bent over a wooden chest, while the last was seated in the act of writing. Pitt felt as if he had entered a time machine. He could not believe he was staring at men who had been citizens of Imperial Rome. Ancient mariners who sailed into ports long buried under the debris of later civilizations, ancestors over 60 generations from the past. They had not been prepared for the Arctic cold. None wore heavy clothing. All were bundled in coarse blankets. They seemed small in size compared to Pitt. All would have measured a good head shorter. One little man was bald, with gray woolly side hair. Another had shaggy red hair and was heavily bearded. Most were clean-shaven. From what he could read through their icy covering, the youngest was around 18, and the oldest close to 40 years of age. The mariner who had died while writing had a leather cap pulled tight around his head, and long strips of wool wrapped around his legs and feet. He was bent over a small stack of wax tablets resting on the scarred surface of a small folding table. A stylus was still gripped in his right hand. The crew did not look as if they had starved or died slowly from the cold. Death had come suddenly and unexpectedly. Pitt guessed the cause. All hatch covers had been tightly sealed to keep out the cold, and the only opening for ventilation had frozen over. The pots containing the last meal were sitting on the small oil stove. There was no way for the heat and smoke to escape to the outside. Lethal carbon monoxide had built up within the cargo hold. Unconsciousness had struck without warning, and each man died where he sat. Almost as if he was afraid to awaken the long-dead seaman, Pitt very carefully chipped the ice away from the wax tablets until they came free. Then he unzipped the front of his dry suit and slipped them inside. Pitt no longer noticed the agony of the cold, the nervous sweat that was trickling from his pores, or the shivering. His mind was so absorbed in the morbid scene that he failed to hear Giordino's repeated demands for a reply.
"Are you still with us?" asked Giordino. "Answer, damn it!"
Pitt mumbled a few unintelligible words.
"Say again, are you in trouble?"
Giordino's concerned tone finally shook Pitt out of his trance-like state. "Inform Commander Knight his worst fear is confirmed," Pitt answered. "The antique status of the ship is genuine. And by the way," he added in a monotonous, laconic voice, "you might also mention that if he needs witnesses, I can produce the crew."